Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Rennie, the founder and creative director for SunServe Bespoke Picnics. Rennie, welcome.
Thank you for having me here tonight.
Thank you for coming. So I know that your line doesn't start with Bespoke Picnics because that would be a very odd place to start. Kind of take me back to where it is in your life where these sort of design elements and this desire to kind of put things in its right place becomes a thing that trips your trigger.
Okay. So many people may know this by now, as I've been expressing, you know, over the course of the business development and I'm presenting ourselves to the community and our story, that I have a background in architecture.
Really?
14 years plus, yes. Formally educated and trained as an architect, and also a career in architecture with multifamily design, boutique, hospitality oriented buildings. And that design sensibility for architecture started actually as an aspiration for interior design and decoration.
Really?
As a very young girl. And I like to tell the story of me playing with my Barbies and not having the financial means to buy a Barbie house or to buy a Barbie car or to even have a Ken for my Barbie, for that matter. And then just being creative in using things that I had around me at my disposal, whether it was a scarf that I folded pretty and turned it into a couch for my Barbie, or an ashtray that I turned it upside down to make the coffee table for my Barbie house. My mom's beautiful pumps as my Barbie convertible, for example. So the creativity really started at a very young age, and having this idea of creating a space out of nothing, right?
Right, that's the ticket.
Yes. And so I was very, you know, when you present something with something that they enjoy, maybe in English it's the same terminology, but I like to call it glitter to your eyes. Mm-hmm. So if you do window shopping and you see something that sparks your interest or something that populates or creates an environment that's more aesthetically pleasing because you added that extra element for that glitter effect, right? The happiness, that extra something that makes the environment what it is. And so always like with beads, like bejeweling my clothes and like I learned how to sew and knit at a very young age through my grandmother, making my own clothes. So some like fashion sensibility as well. And so everything was always geared towards color and texture and putting things together with, again, whatever I had at my disposal at any given time. And that continued throughout my teenage years and my early adulthood when I had to make the choice of going to college and what do I want to be?
Right.
You know, what do I want to study? And again, with the sense that I wanted to become an interior designer and a decorator as well, I chose architecture because I was looking at the bigger picture of being able to do architecture and create the space that allows for the interior magic to take place.
Ah.
So, you know, in a sense, I mean, now we call like curator of architecture or, you know, curator of picnics, but really is like creating the space and what makes that space. So there is a lot of philosophy and poetry in architecture, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And
it's art.
And as in every profession, there is the creative side and then there is the brain scientific side that puts, you know, together what the outcome is for whatever resolution in design becomes. And so I said, well, let me go to school and I'm going to study architecture. And I love everything, again, about texture, color, lightings, the quality of spaces. And it always felt to me like an inherent talent.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You know? Was there someone around you growing up that was like a blueprint for that? Or was it just that people like your grandmother just gave you enough of a lead for you to go with it?
Yeah, so my grandmother gave me a needle and she taught me to stitch my first buttons. And I made what we call like a margarita patch. It was like a square mustard cloth, and I put four buttons on, and I still have it to this day. I should have actually brought it today, but
you
I didn't
should
know.
Frame
I didn't
that. that or something.
I didn't know that we were
going to
go there.
So that's very cool.
Yeah, but again, and you know, playing with my toys, and not just with the Barbie. I mean, I like to make the example of the Barbie because it touches on the realm of the design and the
aesthetics
and creating a space. But it's like really with everything I ever had to do, from design to non-design related things, just using things at my disposal and creativity and strategy to make my desires or whatever the situation is, other people's desires, right, like happen. And so, yeah.
So do you decide to take it seriously because that feeling you're describing, to make the something out of nothing, make the thing happen, you were just gravitated so hard towards that, and architecture seemed like the head pin to that scenario?
Yes, but also there is a bigger scope of the reason why architecture. And so I usually try to explain as that it's, again, being an immigrant in America, came here from having nothing, literally left everything behind, everything that our family had, and came here and started everything from scratch, including learning English, because I knew nothing. The book is on the table, and that's all I could say.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 14.
Okay.
14, yeah. So literally in the middle of even figuring out who I am as a woman, who I am as a person.
Yeah, what that's do I want to do? That's a time. Yeah, I got a 14-year-old son right now, so I don't know.
Yeah, so starting from scratch in like all aspects, except that this has always been with me, right? And when I came to America, I'll say like that came with me because it's part of who I am, right?
Right.
And so, you know, like, oh, I'm going to school. It's a big deal. You know, paying for school, like more than what we could afford, studying, trying to excel in everything that I do to try to get scholarships, stay in college, maintain my GPA, you know, because all of that was important for me to start and finish what I had started. And that's also a big part of me as a person. Mm-hmm. I like to try to think that leave no ends undone.
Right.
Right. So I like to start something. I like to finish something. I like to finish successfully.
Yeah, amen to that.
So, yeah. So why architecture? Because in my mind and in my thought process, I thought, well, I like architecture. I'm passionate about design. I like spaces. I like textures. I researched a little bit, obviously, to be like, oh, what am I getting into? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's not all Barbie houses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, no. It's no Barbie houses. It's not pretty houses with blue skies on a paper. No.
Right.
And I was like, well, if I go to school for architecture, I'm not losing anything, because if truly what I find out to be that I want to be an interior designer or a decorator, I can always do that with the education and training and the teachings that I'm going to absorb going through the process of, you know, finishing up school.
So I don't mean to cut you off, but did you see that as a plan B, or was this like an adjunct plan A?
No, it was plan A, because as I started to research more about architecture, and as I said, like the essence of spaces, what I came to realize, and it's the foundation also of the passion behind architecture and what came after, which is the grander thing that I'll get to, is that the essence of the space is what lies the space itself to become what it is, even if it's empty or the lack of other physical things, just the physicality of the surroundings and what create the vacuum of the space, right? So, and that's where it gets like philosophical and poetic with architecture,
right?
Because a lot of people have different thoughts and different philosophies and academic backgrounds and theories. But to me, architecture lies in the essence of the space. To me, the void that is created with the physicality of the space is the essence of the space, and that's created by the architecture around it.
Gotcha.
That was deep, is like, to me, like deep in my heart, like that's what architecture, it's the power of architecture.
These are the fundamental ethos of the way you see things in general when it comes to creating the space, and this is exactly what I want to know, so I appreciate you sharing it like that.
Yes, and so, so I went to school for architecture. I became very passionate. I did a accredited program, like a 5-year program at a technical school in New Jersey. So I went to New Jersey Institute of Technology, get my 5-year accredited degree, where I also, because before that, so back up 2 years, I went to community college because of a visa renewal situation. It was time to apply for college. And the immigration had my passport. So when I applied to NJIT, they needed a copy of my visa. And I didn't have that in my possession. And the time had lapsed to which I could apply for that semester.
They don't make anything easy.
No. So what does the strategist do? What is the other solution? So I went to community college where I met my beautiful husband that's sitting here and supporting me today. And he has been the big support behind SunServe too. And I went to community college for 2 years. Absolutely loved. I was in the architecture program. And because I had a lot of credits and in parallel, transfer. When I transferred to NJIT, not as a freshman, because I went to the community college with the architecture program, and they had a collaboration, so I transferred into second year. I had a lot of credits, and that allowed me to also get a master's degree at the almost termination of my bachelor. So when I graduated, I graduated with both a bachelor's of architecture and a master's of infrastructure planning.
Wow, that is not an easy feat.
Yes.
Okay, so that now you're looking at quite a pantheon of opportunity in front of you.
Yes.
So what are you thinking at that point?
So I enjoyed. I enjoy every bit of it. I still do. I'm very passionate about architecture. I'm super excited about all the amazing things that are happening in Sarasota, and I try to stay involved and learn what's new. And with that master's degree from NJIT, which is the MRP, MIP, Masters in Infrastructure Planning. Mm-hmm. Because of how many credits I had, they had an opportunity to do a double master's. So
can't make it up.
So I can't make this up, no. So when I graduated from NJIT, I graduated with the Bachelor's of Architecture, accredited Bachelor's of Architecture, and a Master's in Infrastructure Planning. Mm. We've another year and a half at the Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, where I got a degree in City and Regional Planning and International Globalization. So I have a bachelor's degree and I have two master's degree. And again, I went from wanting to be an interior designer and decorator to becoming super passionate about architecture to now going even beyond the scope of architecture and
designing the whole
environment.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, I'm like, and again, I keep talking about like strategic mindset, like, and planning. And so I love, like, I'm super fascinated about maps. And I always been, so like going back to my childhood, you ask what my favorite subject was in school. I love geography. I used to draw maps on, butter paper with pen and color, and I know my mountains and my valleys.
That
and
was just like cartography detour.
Yes, and and this is before we had internet and we had to look at the atlas, and I know how to navigate an atlas. But so again, was he always like this? And then every time I think about it, and even in conversations with my husband and friends, I was like, yes, I always love the spatial physicality and planning and where things are. And I don't know if you're familiar with SimCity.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So we had that when computer was a freaking box with like a 10 by 10 screen.
I lived that life.
And my dad installed that, and he's like, oh, come check it out. And I think maybe at the time I was like 11, 12. And I used to love to like populate houses, and you have to make the street, and you have to figure out where the fire station is going to go, and the school, and now the population grew. You need another school. Oh, there's crime. You need another police station, right?
Yeah.
So as you can tell, like all of that fascinates me, and it always has. So yes, you went from, from the inside to the outside, and then master planning, and I very much enjoy all of that. So going back to the original question, like how then this developed into me and SunServe. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is when you have that kind of schooling. Obviously, you have quite a few options, but you also have a high degree of speciality there. It seems.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit curious what your career looks like, as much as you'd be willing to tell it in that avenue, from beginning to how you get to SunServed.
Sure.
Because not only do I see that the ethos carries through, but I think this is something that would seem, it just seems unbelievable. You know what I mean? Being an architect and having that breadth of knowledge and the ability to be involved in these things that you're that passionate about, I can't imagine the road that gets you to where you can walk away from that. So I'm kind of a little bit curious how that road goes.
Yes. No, thank you for asking. And I'm happy and glad to share. So I've worked in two well-known companies in New Jersey. Now one is, I almost want to say a star architect in New York.
Nice. That's a heck of a term.
So that's to also represent like commitment and dedication on my end, which is something I carry through also with SunServe, the compromise, the quality and the dedication that has always been with me. And it's been since the beginning of me having a career in America, which is my first architecture. I actually started with school, right? Because like you need a lot of dedication to go through architecture school.
Right. That's the
lot
hoop.
Of sleepless
the hoop
nights.
You gotta jump before the hoop to jump.
Yes, yes.
The inception
and
hoop.
And so, yes. And so, yeah. So, yeah, I started, I applied for a job as an intern. So this is go back 2008. And I was to graduate in 2009. With my bachelor/first master's. And I was like, well, let me look for an internship. You know, it's a good time now. This, I was in my, the summer of my fourth year. Yes, because then I was going to graduate that following May. And I was like, let me get an internship. I applied to a few places, and I just happened to have found Icon 5 Architects literally in the backyard of my neighborhood in Princeton. When I say the backyard, meaning because it's like in the surroundings of my neighborhood. I didn't have to go to New York. So I lived in New Jersey prior to coming to Sarasota for 20 years. We've been in Sarasota, my husband and I, and two dogs that we have for 3.5 years now. But, yeah, lived in Hamilton, Princeton area for the whole 20 years. I lived in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I found this company right there in Princeton. They were a small company, but very reputable at the time, doing amazing work and institutional work, like from libraries to student centers and
nice.
Some museum work and some really high-end student centers and community centers throughout New Jersey, New York. They actually done some work here in Florida as well. And when I got the job there as an intern, I was very happy. It was everything that I was looking for. There were a small boutique architecture company that had the same philosophy and mindset that I had and I felt towards architecture.
Right. That
which
couldn't
is
be
very,
easy
yeah, which is very process. I'm very process oriented, and they and their philosophy of architecture also is very process and oriented. So as an intern, I got to work on a few projects. I got to make models. I got to make renderings. I got to put presentation boards together. So I got a little taste of everything. And
very cool.
That's really what I was looking for in working with a small companies to get my feet wet and get the real world experience of all those assets of architecture and an architecture firm.
Right.
When I graduated, so I stayed there that summer when school started. I paused that for like a semester or two, right? Because it was the summer, and then I had two semesters before I graduated. And then I had an offer, which I very happily accepted. And this is 2009, and I had a job, and I was 15 minutes from my house at the time, living with my parents and my sister. And it was also the time where a lot of my friends didn't have jobs because it was the recession.
Right. I was wondering if that was going to weave into this when you started saying 2008 yes. timeline.
Yes. And so I was super happy to have a job, like super happy, blessed, thankful to this day. I love every single one of them. Icon 5 people, if you're listening to me right now.
Big shouts
my
to
heart,
them.
Yeah, my heart goes back to the good times we spent there. And yeah, so that's where I started. I stayed there for 7 years. I worked in some very exciting projects, some very prestigious university work. And again, doing a little bit of everything, contributing to the proposals and beautiful drawings that they submitted to magazines and awards and competitions. And so I was like so happy.
Right.
And it came a time. Oh, so at that time, to the beginning of that I was going to the Blaustein for the city and regional planning. So I was working full-time and going to graduate school full-time. And I also went back and I was teaching as an adjunct at the community college, which was the insemination of me as an as my path to architecture, right? So I wanted to give back, and up to this day, super close with the coordinator of the program, nice. Gary Perryman.
That's awesome.
Little heart.
Yeah.
And that was super helpful, like, to give back and also
right.
Be there for the students that were coming in and be able to provide them with the experience and the foundation that I got there and where it took me afterwards. So to full circle, right?
Right, I was going
to
say. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, so full circle. And so, yeah, I was working full-time, going to graduate school full-time and teaching as an adjunct professor.
And you cloned yourself somewhere in there?
yeah. There was like three of me.
Right.
You know? And so, yeah. And then I felt like it was time for a change. Like I got to a point where it felt a little bit plateaued to me to stay at Icon 5 and doing the things that I was doing or the projects that I was doing. I was like, okay, I need to, you know, like doing self-evaluation and self-analysis and really understanding to me where are my weaknesses and where can I challenge myself to improve or get to the next step or get better. And always in the search of that is when I decided to leave Icon 5 and go to Minowasco, which is my second heart in architecture. And we very open doors welcomed me to their team in Lambertville, New Jersey, where I stayed for another 7 years, actually, until we moved here with the pandemic and I was working remotely. And that was my last architecture job. And I quit that job to fully dedicate myself to SunServe. So at Minowasco, why did I go there? Because they were now focusing multifamily mixed-use housing.
Mm.
So 400-plus apartments, townhouses with the retail aspect, pool, clubhouse, and all of that. And also a very interesting time where Harrison, New Jersey, and, you know, for those of you that are familiar with the Northeast Corridor and all the transitions that are happening in Hoboken, Jersey City, and along the transit corridor for the PATH and the New Jersey Transit.
Mm-hmm.
So Harrison has adopted a redevelopment plan. And I would say for 50% of my time in Minowasco, which was the latter 50% of my time there, I worked in some very exciting projects in Harrison that were assigned to us and our team at Minowasco, and other some miscellaneous projects, but very exciting projects. So
yeah, where you're really going to make a difference.
Yeah, so like I really enjoyed that, and I escalated to project coordinator, where I was now managing those 400-unit mixed-use projects.
Very cool.
Coordinating with structural engineers and plumbing engineers and contractors and doing site visits and writing all the reports, coordinating all the construction administration. And yeah, I explain a little bit more detail because somebody that's not from architecture listening
yeah.
just be like, oh,
yeah.
what is construction administration? You know, or like, what do you really do?
That's when you fold the scarf into the couch or you turn the ashtray over.
That's when I use the needles that my grandmother yeah. taught me how to use, and I stitch the end of the project
yeah.
together to
yes, absolutely.
end it
that's
off.
The vision.
So yeah, but so yeah, that amplify my view and my perspective for architecture to a different sector of architecture,
right?
And a different scale and a different type of detailing or the lack of, you know, because of the nature of multifamily
mm-hmm.
Housing. Although for the projects that I work on, again, I was very lucky at Minowasco to have had the opportunity to work alongside like great senior project architects and you know Bob, like our partner, is like several partners, but Bob was my supervisor partner, if you will, for the projects I worked on. And so again, super grateful for all the opportunities. And yeah, even with the pandemic, we're
so
working remotely.
Yeah, so then this seems to be there's no way I can avoid talking about this no matter who it is on the other side of the table. But tell me what the pandemic does in your life, and it just seems to be everybody's
yes.
fork in the road. It's unavoidable that your story was unaffected by that time.
No, so absolutely. So actually because of the pandemic. So I known my beautiful husband for about 20 years now, I want to say. And life kept us together as friends, but apart as relationship because we were both in different relationships. And so, you know, I end a relationship, long-term relationship, he ended a long-term relationship, and we finally came together, even though there was always some magic there when we were together.
Yeah.
Everybody saw it except us until we did see it. Until we saw it and we made it happen.
Better late than never.
Yes. And then he asked me, he's like, hey, you know, we were dating at the time. And he says, hey, what would you think about leaving New Jersey? At that time, he was also living in New Jersey for about 20 years. He was from Long Island, but then also living in New Jersey for 20 years. Also went to the community college, also went to NJIT. So we went to school together. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we were dating, you know, for a couple months. And he asked me, he's like, hey, how about us leaving New Jersey? And I was like, sure, I like that idea. I hate the cold. I'm cold all the time. Even now, I'm like, I'm wearing a jacket because I always get cold. And so I said, oh, where to? Oh, Florida. I was like, oh, yeah, let's go. You know, but I said, first things first.
there are steps to this.
So I was like, I'm not going to leave my family. I'm not going to leave my job. I'm not going to leave my house to go gallivanting and adventuring in Florida with, you know, no compromise, you know. Again, the strategic
mind. Though it is awfully tempting.
Yes. Yes. So we came on I said, let's go on a trip. I had only been to Florida once at that time, actually with a friend from Brazil for a weekend in Miami. So I didn't even know Florida, you know.
Yeah,
like,
Miami's a
yeah.
its
so
own
I was
universe.
Like, I don't know Florida. I said, you want to move to Florida? Let's see what's up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So we said, okay, let's schedule a trip. Let's go check it out. Let's fill out the territory. Let me see if what I think it's what it is, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And also for yourself, like, let's see if that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
So we came, and serendipity happened.
Nice.
We were on our last day here, our last day before the day we left to the airport, right? Mm-hmm. The day before the last. And we had no idea about Siesta Key. Siesta Key is the number one beach in America. All of this paparazzi about Sarasota and Siesta Key. What is it? We checked in our Airbnb and we said, you know what? Let's GPS beach. Like, we want to go see the sunset.
Right. Easy
so,
enough.
So, yeah, it was taking us to Siesta Key Village to go to Siesta Key Beach, which at that time, again, we had no idea what that was.
Right.
It was like, oh, it's the closest beach. Let's go.
None at all.
And then at the traffic light, at the beautiful, almost sunset, there was a sign for an open house. So I said, let's make a U-turn, which happened to be the right turn.
There you go.
Because it led us to the house, you know, our first house here in Sarasota.
There you go.
And we loved it. We went to the beach. We pondered. We were playing in the water for like hours, something that we never do in New Jersey because the water is so cold.
You're right.
And we were just in love, I guess, with Sarasota. And we decided to put an offer in the house. And so we went back to New Jersey, the offer, we got an inspection, and then, you know, because the situation seemed like too good to be true.
Right.
And we said, well, let's
get
an inspection, yeah. So we got an inspection, everything was good, we put an offer, 30 days later, we had the keys to the house.
Love it.
And it just happened like that. And so that thing, so this was like October. And so that Thanksgiving, we had like 4 days because I had tapped out my vacation for the vacation we came to visit.
You're right.
You know, Sarasota. Right. So I said, I don't have any more vacation time, you know. And I said, well, let's use Thanksgiving and go and furnish the house. Let's keep it as a vacation rental temporarily. And we were getting married that coming May, the following May.
Right.
And so we said, let's rent the house. And then we'll do what we have to do because everybody's in New Jersey. And then after our wedding, we move fully to Sarasota.
Right.
Well, the pandemic happened. So,
oh.
Yes.
I didn't realize where we were at the timeline. I thought we were into it there. Okay, so
yes.
You got curveballed
so
big time.
So this is October before March beginning of pandemic.
Okay, so you really got here at a serendipitous time.
Yes, not even planning to buy a house. We're just coming to see
what's up. You could have ended up paying triple for your house.
Yeah, no.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So you're about to get married, yes, and pandemic comes in, and you've got this house already purchased and rental set up here.
Yeah.
Life ready to
go. Well, for that time period, right? And then when the pandemic happens, you know, again in March, I was working remotely because my dog had an injury. I had a little miniature dachshund, and she had an injury and gone through surgery. So I had to stay home to do physical therapy and put her in the swimming pool and whatnot, like just to attend to her. So even before everybody went remote, I was already 3 times a week working from home to attend to the dog. And I'm super thankful again for, you know, Asko and Bob and the senior project manager at the time to even understand and allow that to happen, because nobody else was working remotely. And then, you know, it creates a little, what do you call?
Exception
creates a, what's the word? Oh my God. Anyways,
some
I escaped
kind of jealousy
the word
with
now.
Everyone else?
Well, in the office, it creates like, help me. Now it's going to bother me. It's not stamina. It's well, because like, am I getting preferential treatment?
Oh, gotcha,
and,
gotcha.
You know, I forget the word now.
I follow you.
ESL here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was already working mostly remotely because of the dog. And then when the pandemic happened, to me, I guess, was an easier transition because I was already doing that for about a month or two.
Right.
And then when
what
the pandemic happened, I was like, well, I'm already working from home. And then the office completely shut down, like the entire rest of New Jersey. It was not like here in Florida. And I say not like here in Florida because we were then working remotely for about a month or so. Mm-hmm. My husband had then moved in with me. We had got a tenant to his place because we were planning to get married and move out. So we're getting our ducks in order, not knowing that the pandemic's going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
And so we looked at each other one day and I said, listen, winter is coming. I was like, I do not want to stay in New Jersey one more winter. We already have a house in Sarasota. Everybody is shut down. We don't know how long this pandemic is going to last. And I said, let's go quarantine in Florida.
There you go.
So we literally like message our entire family, saying, hey, we're moving to Sarasota at the end of the month because we, you know, we now had to look for a tenant for my property, so we're not paying 2 mortgages, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And very serendipitous too. I, you know, a family came about interested in the property, and it just happened to be 2 days after the day we had scheduled the truck to pack the entire house, get the dogs in, get the hell out of New Jersey.
It was going one way or the other.
Yes, and so, but awesome. nobody believed it. You know, they're like, really, you going? Like, my husband's mother is like, well, no, like, no, that's not happening. Like, my parents were kind of, like, ignoring my sister. And then when we invited, you know, we had to section the visits with a few groups of friends because of the separation. You can only congregate with, like, 6 or 7 people at the time. And, you know, we had to do different groupings to do our goodbyes, if you will.
Yeah.
And our farewell. And, yeah, and then it wasn't until then that people clicked. They're like, oh, my God, they're really going, you know?
So when you came here, you stayed working remotely for the company in New Jersey?
Correct. So because everything was remotely, I mean, my husband always worked remotely for the company that he was working for at that time. And so nothing really changed for him.
Oh, that's nice.
From a work perspective, that
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
And for me, either because now the entire company was remotely, so it wasn't going to be like preferential treatment or like, why is she not working from Florida? And, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, yeah, I stayed working for like another year. And very shortly after we arrived to Sarasota, so that was June, I want to say June 2020. Yeah, we're going to be 4 years this summer. 4 years?
That seems...
I don't know.
You're fresh.
My
though.
Math, I'm like, yeah.
Plus, it's been a quick 4 years for everyone.
Yes. And so, I stayed working remotely, and short after that June, I think it was like already October or September that year, I started thinking about SunServe and cooking and, you know, thinking about strategy. Am I going to do this? How am I going to do it? Am I keeping my job?
Yeah, what's the spark for that?
You know?
Did you see somebody with like a poorly organized picnic and you were like, wait a minute?
No. So I want to make very clear here. I mean, for those who know what a luxury picnic is, and, you know, some people are still not familiar, and that's a big part of what I do. It's educate, you know, people about like what do we do and the services and what is a luxury picnic.
Well,
and
I'm up now.
Yes. And so I'm not the catalyst of the luxury picnic that started. I think it's also a blossom of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But it started, I believe, on the West Coast. I want to say like California area, if I'm not mistaken. And so maybe like 3, 4, 5 years even before the pandemic, like very slowly. But with the pandemic, most certainly a lot of other luxury picnic companies started to be created and take business in different parts of America. In Sarasota, when I started, there were only 3, if my research is correct. You know, because I was like, oh, let me see. Is there a need for this? You know, like who else is doing this and what are they doing? You know?
Okay, so you took a real measured approach to doing
it. Yeah, so I said, I mean, yeah, if the market is saturated, like, what are my chances? Am I quitting my job to do this or not? Besides the desire and the passion that I had to do it and the gut feeling, right? Because I'm also, like, a big believer of, like, my gut feeling, you know, and I try to go by intuition. And even though I'm very process and strategic oriented, I'm also very sentimental and intuitive.
Well, one can help the other.
Yes. And so, I did my research to find out, you know, what's going on in the area. Is the service available here? Who's doing? What are they doing? What are they not doing? And whatnot. And so I was cooking all of this for about 7-8 months. And then I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I created a logo. I created a brand. I had a vision, right, of like what and how I wanted to go about this. And so, again, with the support of my husband and friends and family to create the brand, to build my website, and to just get started. I had like no capital in my pocket to invest. And how do you start something when you have no money?
Well, that was going to be my question. Were you approaching the, for want of a better way of putting this, were you approaching the building of this in somewhat the same manner you had approached the building of, say, one of these 400 unit buildings? Were you using that same kind of ABC?
Oh, that's very interesting. I never thought about it that way, but I guess you can say that, I mean, I've been trained as an architect. I mean, inherently, I have some, you know, some abilities, right, and some innate talent, but I think it would be accurate to say that my training in architecture has also aided to some capacity the way I process and I think about going about anything.
Yeah, right.
You
that's
know,
kind
like
of what I'm...
my finances, my business, my personal life, my relationship with my husband and family and whatnot. So definitely I have a very organized and coordinated and strategic approach to everything. And yes, it was no different for Sunserved. You know, thinking about what was needed to get started, again, without having the financial resources, what can I do and how can I do it to get started? Because I just knew I needed to get started. Like, I was itching. Actually, my teepee, my canvas teepee, is the very first item that I bought. And when I received that, I opened that up in the living room. And I think my husband is here and he's laughing because he remembered me, like, you know, telling him the story and telling him the vision. And as an architect, he can also think three-dimensionally. So you don't have that in front of you, like, you can imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because when that box arrived and I opened that teepee in the living room, I went and I sat in it and I had a little artificial planting that comes with it, and I decorated, and I got like our coffee table, and I went quickly to the kitchen, and I couldn't wait, and I got some plates,
and I had
like a whole picnic set up in our living room in a matter of like seconds, and it's just like I didn't even have to think about it. I just knew exactly what I had to get and where everything was and where
I
was going
to
put it.
It already existed here. Yes. You just finally got to let it out.
Yes, yes. And so that's how I started. So I started with one table, with a set of 4 plates, 4 utensils, 4 place settings, 4 cups, and the rest has just been...
So take me to the first one that you do. What's the first picnic you show up, or the first event or whatever, what's the word you would use to describe it? The first picnic you show up and do, what are you thinking? Is it teepee?
No, it wasn't even the teepee, because this was September. So we started September 2021 is, I guess, the official it's when we started SunSurf, right? The inception of SunSurf, September 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the end of our hurricane season.
Right.
So the first picnic I had actually was at the bay. No teepee. It was a ground cover with not even the low table, because I was so afraid that it was going to get so windy. Again, I didn't have the experience of like, oh my God, if it gets so windy, what do? I can't run and pick up everything shove it in a bag, you know, so like just feeling out the territory, gauging the weather. And even to this day, I mean, the weather plays a huge part in the planning of the picnic. And I appreciate all the customers that are flexible and understanding of that, and me having to educate the customers that are not, but then they become understanding, right? Because there's a lot that it's not in my control.
Exactly.
And as much as I want to make this come to a reality to every single guest, sometimes it's just not possible due to the weather.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, right.
But yeah, so
that's Florida.
Yeah, yeah, that's Florida. That's what I say, you know. We get a lot of transient customers, also transient clients.
Of course.
I would say like it's 50-50 for my clientele. I have like a lot of locals, and I have also a lot of tourists or people that are staycationing from other areas of Florida as well. And the Floridians know what to expect when I say, well, it's going to be a little bit windy. I'm not sure about that, you know, but if you're not from Florida and I say, well, it's going to be a little bit windy, I don't know about that. They'll be like, well, but we want it at 5:00 in the afternoon. I'm like, well, that's the highest wind of the day. Do you have flexibility with the time, or can we reschedule? And so these are hurdles of the business, right, that I've been learning in the course of the past 3 years, because we're going to be three this September. And yeah, just a learning curve. And yeah, the first picnic, no teepee, blanket on the ground, pillows. I had a table tray, I had donuts, I had some fresh fruit, and it was beautiful. It was sunset on the bay at the Nora Parison Park. So the north bridge that goes into Siesta, mm-hmm. the little park on the left, mm-hmm. now where they now have the bathrooms for the docking on the left side and the parking, but on the opposite side.
Right.
And it was just so nice and quiet, and the couple enjoyed. It was a couple. They were celebrating like a birthday. I think it was the wife's birthday. And yeah, and then from then, just increasing the inventory, increasing the knowledge, increasing getting to. And I was also learning about Sarasota, because even the first couple of months that I was here, even though things were a lot more open in Sarasota, I was still with the mindset of New Jersey and keeping myself at home, shopping or getting out of the house, like very few instances, you know, for that proximity or contamination pandemic mindset.
We didn't do that.
Yeah. And then we realized, nope, people are just out and about, no masks, all the restaurants are open.
It was a weird thing.
Yeah. But then again, that delayed a little bit my learning curve to go around Sarasota and explore potential areas. Oh, where can I host a picnic? What is the beach like?
Well, and our tourism wasn't normal at that time necessarily either. Everything was odd.
Yes. And then like also reaching out to the authorities, making sure I was doing everything the proper way by the books, paying my taxes, getting, you know, my permits, getting the approvals that were required to legally and professionally execute the picnics from the very beginning. So at that time also, nobody in Sarasota, no department that I've called to inquire about a picnic had any idea of what a picnic even was, which brings me to think that whomever else was doing never went through the proper channels to do it, because I was the first one calling to try to do it the right way.
Right.
And that's not to say that the companies they're running now are not doing their due diligence and, you know, procuring the same routes. It's just at that time. So, again, this is like post-pandemic, like 2021. But, yeah, we tried to do everything from the beginning, cross our teeth, business development, and then very slowly make relationships, learn about more locations, learn about venues. I started to go out and network to try to get the word out. So both from a friendship perspective and also from a business perspective, because I'm new to Sarasota. I know nobody. I know nowhere. You know? So it was all very new. It's a new profession too, in a sense, you know, like I
oh, big time. Done,
you know, I know buildings. I know AutoCAD and Revit and, you know, pretty pictures on paper and the computer. And so... it's been a huge learning curve. Yeah.
So I don't mean to press rewind here, but it just dawns on me that I think I'm still missing the operative point here, where I understand you come to Sarasota, there's opportunity for a new life here, but there was also opportunity to stick with what you were so highly trained at and well successful at and loving for the most part. Yeah. Where is the point where you're like, this dream of doing SunServed is enough for me to straight up walk away from this? You weren't just minorly invested in this. You were majorly invested in that.
Yes, yes. So it wasn't without a pain, and it wasn't without having to make the difficult decision, because as to this day, there is some days I was like, oh my God, I should just go get an architecture job.
Right.
You know, there is like... city planning job openings for the city of Sarasota. I can go be a planner for the city,
and
you know.
We need it.
But there is a few things that were motivators. So going back to the reason why behind SunServe, so along with all the visual and design innate and educational professional course of, you know, my academic career, I've also grew up with a large family. On my mom's side, and then very close together with my dad's side, and always spending time together. So there was never a table with less than like 6 or 8 people.
Dang.
And when we all got together, it's like 15, 20, 30, right? Big family, always gathering for all holidays, different cultural backgrounds, different celebrations, you know, from both parts of the family.
Very cool.
And so I've grew up in a hosting environment.
Ah.
Right. So my grandmother was like unbelievable meticulous at putting out a table. It didn't matter if you were the neighbor from the floor above or the, you know, the guy that worked at the bakery downstairs, and you're coming to her house to have a cup of coffee, it wasn't just a cup of coffee.
Oh. So you saw this in action.
So I grew up, seeing her always prepare the table and, you know, the attention to detail, making sure there was always water and coffee and tea and cookies and the plate for this and the cup for them. There was always, necessarily in a, what do you call, like table etiquette?
Yeah.
Right? Because there is like etiquette for table and how you you formally should set up your cups and
there's
your plates
cartography
and your
for that too.
And, yes. So not in that sense, but in the sense of creating a table set that made the guest comfortable.
Mm.
Right? And so that's also what I like to touch upon when people ask me, well, what is a luxury picnic? Right? What is a picnic? So a picnic is not about like putting pretty and proper utensils at the table and the cup on the right side of the plate and the knife and the fork in the right side of the plate, right? It's about allowing an environment that's created to allow for comfort and enjoyment, right? And so obviously I have certain sensibility and table etiquette and all of that enhance how I go about the tablescaping and setting up the items for a particular picnic or even for the gifts, right? Because we do custom gifts as well. So that same compromise, the same quality and attention to detail, it's found throughout all the services and products that we provide, because we are looking for that end satisfaction that's not tangible, right? It's not about the cup or what kind of cup it is. It's about how do you feel sitting here with the cup, drinking what you're drinking, and what memory you're going to encapsulate thereafter, right? It's about the long-lasting memory that's created by your enjoyment and you being present in the moment, like just being in the moment with the picnic and remembering that feeling and remembering that memory and carrying that feeling with you every time you think about that occasion.
So it's a memory.
It's a poetry.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. But that's so, there again, that's bringing it full circle.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you hadn't seen your grandma do this, yes, you wouldn't
yes,
be able to bring that all full,
yes,
circle.
And both my grandmothers, you know, because, you know, my paternal grandmother had her ways of doing, and then my maternal grandmother also, like, very caring, providing, putting on the table, like, gathering. And it never felt like there was anything missing. And even if there was, it was just so satisfying to sit there with whatever was provided that we were so enchanted, I guess, if you will, with being there with whom we were there with,
right,
celebrating. Even if it was dinner, like, it's a celebration, right? We're together. So sometimes I like to say a picnic just because it's for all occasions, but just being is also an occasion, right?
This is true. We all found that
so,
out.
So, yes.
Whether we were trying to ignore it or not, yes, we found that out.
So, yeah, that's where, like, you know, so to go back to your question, like, this sense of hosting and entertaining, and then me becoming a young woman, and then becoming, I'm the oldest of my maternal side, which is the biggest side of the family, right? Mm-hmm. And the oldest female on my paternal side, right? And so every time we have to put the table, Rennie helps to set up the table, whether it was my aunt or my grandmother or my mom or you know, whomever house we were, it was my table also to help and set. And I always found so much joy, like opening the cabinets, taking out the plates, putting the pretty napkins, and then inviting everybody to the table. And
awesome.
That, you know, so that's where that passion also comes from. So it's a memory stamped in my personality, right? And so when the pandemic happened and we came to Sarasota, as I said, we knew nobody. We knew nowhere. And so that itch and that craving for gathering and meeting people and being with people and providing the same happiness and pleasure to others, even if they weren't family, because we treat everyone like family.
Very right? cool.
And so, you know, and I say this, like, you know, Dom and I, you know, my husband, we were sitting on the beach. It was a beautiful sunset. Never seen a most beautiful sunset other than in Rio. Doesn't tap that, you know.
Fine. If it's us in Rio, I'll take it.
Yeah, sunset in Brazil is a whole nother story. That's for another.
Yeah.
That's for another episode. So, yeah, and I was like, oh my God, wouldn't it be beautiful to have a table setting right here where we can eat and drink and hang out and watch the water and the sun and the breeze, and we're outside, you know?
Yeah.
And as I said, like, I'm not the catalyst of that idea, but I had no idea that luxury picnics existed at that time. I had no idea that others were providing that service in the West Coast or, you know, a few other areas in America and even in other countries. Like, I think picnics were also very huge in Australia. Yeah, and I said, you know what? Doesn't matter, because I'm going to do it my way, and it's going to be unique, and it's going to be what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I like to hear. So then bring me up to now. What are the – because I know it's not just the bespoke picnics now. Like you said, you have gifts and things that you offer. Talk to me about what the business is right now.
Right. So the idea was also to provide breakfast boxes, deliver picnic style breakfast boxes or lunch boxes, right? With mm-hmm. the flair of the picnic, with the relaxation of a picnic, even though it's presented in a little bit more luxurious setting than a picnic, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, there is a big misconception. I mean, maybe not now, because I would say 50% of the population is now educated on what a luxury picnic is.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah.
at that time, when you say, well, it's a picnic, people think about a plaided tablecloth mm-hmm. with a basket, a baguette, a bottle of wine, and some fruit and cheese, and good, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, and there you're done.
Yes. You know.
The fruit and cheese was extra.
Correct. So it's like, where does the luxury coming place. The luxury is the service that's provided, the customer service, attending to the needs, the size, the fact that there is a table or there is a tray table, or that we have cutlery or we have cups, regardless if it's plastic or acrylic or glass. Different people in the industry provide different types of furnishings, if mm-hmm. you will, with their picnic setups. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea that it's not just a ground cover with a basket.
You're right. Right.
And so what is luxury? The service is a luxury, right? Not necessarily the physicality of what you're getting. Of course, that's a part of it. It's a big part of it. But the service itself and attending to the needs of the customers and delivering, setting up, taking down, the fact that you don't have to do that, it's being done for you. So that service is a luxury.
Like room service to the nth degree.
Correct. Yes. Which also, so again, to go back to your question. So yes, we do the picnics on all scales. Currently, we serve up to 40 for a picnic.
Holy smokes.
Yes. So it's not like a micro picnic. Now we evolved to, you know, up to 40.
That's like
40.
How do you put banquet and picnic together? That's like a pinkwit.
Yes. Yes. Pinkwit. I like that. Huh. I may quote you.
No problem. I stuff words together all the time.
Yes. And so, we do, you know, as I said, all occasions, and not just for picnics. So we do elopements, we do micro weddings. I do team build now because I can accommodate up to 40 people. So some corporate team build or women retreats and whatnot. So and then we have the gifts, which is the boutique flower boxes where we use fresh flowers or preserved roses to curate a boutique flower box, but even our boxes have an element of surprise, right? So the bespoke aspect of things, the personalization and the customization of both the picnic service and the gift product baskets have the essence and the eccentricity of the experience. So it's not just a box with stuff. Right?
You're right.
It's a box that offers an element of surprise. So it's either a drawer that unveils chocolates or a gift card or a proposal ring.
Ah.
You know, it's a box that opens up. It's a double decker. It's a box that can be customized with the, personalized with the name of the person, you know, with the recipient. And after they're done with the flowers or the chocolates, the box serves as a storage keepsake. So it's a memory, again, that stays with the recipient much longer after the occasion which it was gifted for.
Right.
Right. So that element is present in everything that we do. We're looking into micro event space right now. You know, I've been scouting town for a physical space to potentially have a storefront for the physical, for the gift products, but also to provide Sarasota and our community with a micro event space, which there isn't a lot of. It's usually like big venues for big events. And so there's nothing picnic scale.
This is true.
I'm not going to say there isn't. There is very little.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah. So this is, I guess, in a business development aspect, that's where we are looking to go next. You know, it's in the works. And yeah.
So that's kind of a funny thing. It's kind of like the terror of brick and mortar. You know what I mean? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? So
we're contemplating. So that's why I said, like, that's what's in the works, and I'm still contemplating, like, is this something we want to do or not want to do? You know?
Yeah.
So we're still
engaging. I always, when we get to this portion of the show, I always like to ask, what do you think the immediate future, or what do you hope that the immediate future holds for you? Is that sussing out this kink in the slinky at the moment as to brick and mortar or not? Is this what the immediate future is, or do you got anything lined up past that?
There's a lot of plans. There's a lot of plans, but as once I've heard, and I'll repeat it, nothing is set in stone.
Yeah, right. Very good philosophy to have in an entrepreneurial world.
So, yes, I'm still gauging a lot of the territory and a lot of what I do. It's being, and it continues to be, a learning curve, because I'm always implementing and testing and trying new concepts and new things. And I gauge a lot of feedback from the customers and from the people I network with in the community.
Right.
To try to help me in the decision making as to what do I want to dedicate for the business development next.
Right.
And so what the immediate future holds, I don't know, but I'm working to find out.
Well, there you go. That's it. Well, and you guys are relatively fresh here, and we are in a mad state of flux here. You know, so it's the immediate future to be open-minded about is probably the best thing you can do.
Yes.
So I won't be too specific. We can get you out of here on something fun. Yes. If you could do a luxury picnic event either anywhere or for anyone, where would it be? Like the foot of the Eiffel Tower or in the front lawn of the White House or...
Oh, man. Now you got me on the spot. Can I have like 2 seconds yep. to think about sure. it? Sure,
yeah.
Actually, well, so my super fan architect has always been and still is Oscar Niemeyer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's no longer with us. He passed at like 100 and some years old, like a couple of years ago.
Wow.
And he has always been my heart for architecture with all the curves and the natural environment and creating forms and sculptural architecture. And not that he's my idol, but I always look up to his architecture and his life and sure. works as an architect. And so I would say if he was still here with us today, I would probably love to hand make a curvilinear low table and go set it up on a mountain with some beautiful vegetation overlooking the sea from above and have Oscar Niemeyer enjoy that picnic with a beautiful sunset in all layers of architecture and picnicking.
There you go. Well, you paint a beautiful picture. You got me there. I'm there. Yes. Well, Rennie, I very much appreciate you coming down. I'm very grateful to have heard from you. And I also very much appreciate you sharing some of your story with everybody out there. And, I look forward to doing this again someday, maybe when it's brick and mortar, maybe when it's not.
Thank you. Thank you for
having me. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.